Hello and welcome to the Geek Embassy Watches Runaways. I'm your host, Regina McMenemy, and I'm here with Dante, Evan, and Isabella to talk about a new show. And I am the person who knows the least about this.
Which I'm super excited about. Because I get to say that I know more than a PhD.
Than a doctor, right.
You know, I've only got my lowly master's degree here.
Such an inverse experience from Pathfinder.
Right, I know, exactly, right? Exactly. So, I'm new to Marvel's Runaways, which is airing on Hulu as a weekly series. The first three episodes drop, just like they did with The Handmaid's Tale. They drop the first three, and then they do weekly episodes from then on. So for this episode, we're going to cover episodes 1 through 4, and we're going to do our best to keep this to about an hour, even though we're going to cover a lot of material. Mm-hmm. And in order to make sure we get things to run kind of smoothly, Dante is going to be the lead facilitator for this show.
I'm really excited. You let all the power go to my head. First thing more than you, now I get to lead everything. It's going to be great. So viewers, we're not going to be doing a real play-by-play of the episode plot points. We have too much to cover, and we have way too little time, and a lot of us are hungry and sleepy, to be completely frank. So we're going to give you kind of like a high-level overview in the style of the prologue of Romeo and Juliet. So we begin with five houses, all alike in dignity, in fair Malibu where we lay our scene. From ancient gods break new mutiny, where innocent blood makes parental hands unclean. From forth the fatal loins of these five foes, a group of star-crossed children uproot their lives, whose misadventures change their minds, hope with their deeds bury their parents' pride. I thought I was really excited about that. I'm sorry, that was just my own self plugs.
That's lovely. Like, well, I was like, I was reading it, and I'm like, I know this. Why do I know this? And I know.
Because everyone read it in their grade.
Well, yeah, I worked on a production of Romeo and Juliet back in the day, so I have heard these, you know.
Of course, yeah.
In production over and over again. But I have to point out to our listeners and our viewers who might not know that Dante's profile on his job's website is actually a retelling of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah.
With his own story in it. Yeah. So this is a little bit of Dante's shtick.
Yeah, it kind of is. The best part was when my boss realized what it was 3 months later.
I know.
It was too late to change it.
She thought it had a nice cadence to it, and she couldn't figure out why.
It was wonderful. So anyways, so the real summary of what's going on in these past four episodes. Episode one starts out with the introduction of all of our title runaways. But they haven't run away yet. It's six kids: Alex, Chase, Gert, Molly, Carolina, and Amy's deceased. Nico. Okay. Sorry, I wrote Amy first in my notes. They used to be all close friends, but Amy died under circumstances that appear to be a suicide. But this is a Marvel show. Clearly, it's not a suicide. About 2 years ago, and the group has been broken up ever since. The group dynamics have just entirely shifted. Alex is trying to rekindle the friendships and gathers them through a whole bunch of happenstance and weird goings-on into his parents' house during their annual charity meeting. I think is what they build it as during the show. They go to spy on their parents and accidentally stumble into a secret murder basement. That's the actual terms from the show, murder basement. And the kids witness their parents execute a ritual killing while dressed in these long red draconian robes. The kids resolve to get to the bottom of what they witnessed, answer questions about their past, all while trying to put on a good face for high school and for their parents. Hilarity ensues for episodes 2 through 4 as they are piecing through the mystery, and each one of them comes to their own conclusions as to what they witnessed, and they get one step closer to realizing that what they witnessed was actually as brutal and actually as cruel and evil as it appeared to be. And that is very high level overview of what what started in episode one and where we are in episode four's conclusion. Welcome to Marvel's Breakfast Club. Hooray. I mean, anything else that that you three want to go ahead and contribute to the plot, or like, is that good enough?
I think that covers
Velociraptor.
The Velociraptor? Oh, yes. Right, yeah, there is
also a Velociraptor.
Yes.
There's a Velociraptor.
There is a dinosaur.
Knocking on my door. Knocking on 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. It's real dinosaur.
So, Ed, yeah, I thought that the dinosaur graphics were actually really cool. But anyways, let's move right into overall impressions of the show. So, you know, like it, love it, hate it, meh, you know, emoji shrug. Give us your Reader's Digest, your overall review. Regina, since you are the newest of the new people to this franchise, I am interested to hear what you say first.
Okay. I really liked it just from the beginning. I like the characters. I like the variety in the characters. I know one of the things that had been talked about that I had read about before it came out, because I don't know the series from the comics, but I had seen a lot of people talking about it on like the Mary Sue and IO9 or whatever in anticipation of it coming out, and talking about how it's such a diverse cast for the kids. And that's absolutely true. And so that's great. But I like the diversity in like their strengths, which I know is like, you know, part of the construction of the story. But in terms of like how you like meet and how you behave as an adolescent at that age where you're just kind of like figuring out, okay, I'm kind of okay at this and I might get really good at it. Yeah. I can see that in the characters. And I love teen stories that have enough definition of who the characters are from the get-go, so we can really watch their evolution. So that was, you know, from when the night that I watched all three in a row and stayed up until 1 o'clock in the morning doing so.
I love it.
From that night, that was like my takeaway. It was like I felt like I really had a solid impression of who each of the characters were from the kid side, and as the parents as well. Like, I still feel like we're getting a lot of reveal from the parents' stories. But I feel like the kids are pretty solid, and I'm feeling pretty confident about wanting to learn more about them.
Awesome. All right. Evan, Isabella, which of you wants to go next? Don't make me choose. Okay, Isabella, you're going. No, all right, Evan, you're going. Let's do it.
I am. It is very difficult for me to separate the comic nerd in me from the TV show nerd in me, because the Runaways comic is my favorite comic series of all time. So I have been waiting for this show to exist for like 5, 6, 7 years since I first found the comics. But so, I'm not going to talk too much about the comics other than it's almost perfect. And that just fills me with joy. Just tiny little minuscule things that I particularly appreciate. That makes me happy. But it's also all the things that were strong in the comic are really strong in this show too, which are the most important things. Specifically, like Regina was saying, the teens, they feel like real teens and the kind of struggles they're going for. Obviously, most real-life teens don't have to deal with the fact that their parents are supervillains, but they've got, there's like microcosms of these problems going on, and they teens will. And I think other than, with the kind of exception of Spider-Man Homecoming, we haven't really seen a Superman movie that really showed things from a teen's point of view. So I think this show serves as kind of a more relatable ground level kind of a thing for teens who are going through their own issues to kind of bond with. They can relate with these characters and the kind of struggle they're going through. So the way these characters act is, I think, more inspirational to people in that particular age demographic. The show as a whole, I'm very much enjoying it. The only complaint I could possibly have in general terms is it seems like it's a pretty slow build. Like, it's still, even 4 episodes in, it still kind of feels like we're in the pilot, just in terms of the speed at which the plot is unfurling. Yeah.
I was going to ask about that. I don't know if I should do this here or later, but because I imagined from the title Runaways that the main characters were going to be the runaways. And then from the end of episode four, I was wondering, because they started to realize that the sacrifices that were all runaways. And I was like, oh, okay, so this is not them running away. It's it's the kids that have, you know, been sacrificed that are the runaways. So I was like, okay, that shifted a little bit of what I was kind of thinking about.
Yeah, and you even had the entire Yorks family at the end of episode four attempting to also go ahead and be the runaways.
Right, yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. Who had, and they knew that was like great when the...
All right, cool. So let's move on. Isabella, your overall impressions of the show.
I really liked it, but I would have to agree with Evan that it's moving very slow. And I was watching it with someone who was like, I can't tell what this show is going to be like because it still feels like it's just starting. And my impression from the comics was that I also feel it's moving a little slower than I thought it would, because we don't know anything. Like if you just take the show, we don't really know anything. We don't know what these sacrifices are for, why they're doing it. We have some vague idea that they've been doing it for a long time, and that's really it. And I've read some of the comics, but not really in any sequence.
Yeah.
They're just what I could find from the library, so I am kind of a little lost, too.
Okay.
Some major plot points. Who is this creepy guy? Creepy half-dead man. That Carolina's mother is keeping in our meditation room.
And the glowing body parts.
Yeah.
Well, we're all kind of on even footing on that one, because like that's something that I don't remember ever being in the comics at all.
That
character. Okay, so it's not just me.
I've got some ideas about who it might be, but.
Yeah, that character does not exist in the comics. I could
at least not
absolutely assure you.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I mean, I've read every single issue of Runaways. I can absolutely assure you that he is not there.
I have some ideas as to who that character is going to end up being in some of
I have an idea too, but I mean that's just from what I've been told in the show, so.
So anyways. I don't want to go ahead and harp on very much in my overall summary. I mean, I loved it. I think it's fantastic. The characters are all pitch perfect. They've been raised pretty much straight out of the books, and they have just been put onto the screen. Again, coming from somebody who has read every single issue of Runaways multiple times, because I'm that guy. I also, like all of you, seem to have an issue with the pacing. I'm upset with how slow the show is going, but more that like I don't know how they're possibly going to finish the season with they're already basically at the halfway point. Next week will be episode number 5 of 10 that they've ordered, and you know, spoiler alert. In the comics, it's the kids that run away. Our main cast runs away. I think it's in like episode or issue 3.
It's almost immediately.
Yeah, it's almost immediately. They're just like, nope, our parents are evil. We're leaving. But again, you know, like that's comic books. Everything kind of has to work on an accelerated time frame. Whereas with TV, I guess they've got a little bit more liberty with it. But I'm echoing a lot of your sentiments. I think it's great. The plot's great. The characters are fantastic. It is as good of a faithful adaptation that I could have possibly hoped for. So I'm just going to go ahead and leave it there. And I think we've already touched on this a lot in our overall summaries. But as far as I'm concerned, this show is probably one of the most ambitious and complex shows we've seen from Marvel, and certainly since the advent of Marvel Television's Netflix era, in terms of just like juggling plot lines and interpersonal relationships and developing characters. And goodness gracious, this cast is humongous.
Yes.
It is
and awesome. Cast is amazing.
Every single one of them has a moment to shine, and it's wonderful.
I know. In every episode, there's one, you know, everybody's got a scene that's just like outstanding character building. And like the balance and the way they're balancing the storytelling is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Impressive.
Yeah, I thought to myself, like, James Marsters is in the show. He's going to steal every single scene, and he doesn't.
He can't.
He has, but he hasn't stolen every single scene that he's been in. I guess, like, how do you all feel about the juggling plot lines, about balancing this gargantuan cast? Do we feel like any characters or plot lines have gotten the shaft? Anybody we wish would be better developed? Any plot lines that we wish would be dropped? Is Marvel trying to do too much? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
I definitely think all the characters are phenomenal. Like, they're perfectly adapted. It's almost eerie in some cases. It's like, it feels literally like characters from the comic are just appearing on a screen and talking and stuff. But like, I worry to a degree that they may end up making the villains, the parents, that they might end up making them a bit too, because they've kind of almost split it 50-50 between the teens and the parents, which is an interesting way to take it. Mm-hmm. And I really like some of the new ways they are exploring some of those characters, and some of them are still perfectly just like they were in the comics. But they've definitely skewed for a more sympathetic approach to several of the parents.
Absolutely.
And in the comics, it's indisputably, it's about the teens. It's about them. They're the main characters. And the parents are indisputably the bad guys. Like, there's various degrees to which they care about their kids, and there is that dynamic of, like, even though they do terrible things and even though the kids know they do terrible things, they're still also family.
Mm-hmm.
Reconcile for both sides, and like some of the parents end up like kind of having halfway changes of heart and stuff like that. But it seems at this point in the story the parents are more reluctant villains. And I'm wondering if, as the story unfolds, how long that's going to be able to stand up. Because there's things that are going to have to happen later on where you need to have a strong good guy, bad guy dynamic, which we don't really have yet.
Well, yeah, I mean, because it's Marvel, we have to have a good guy, bad guy scenario. It is a superhero TV show, after all. Allegedly a superhero TV show. All right, so Regina, Isabella, any thoughts on the juggling plot lines and the ambitiousness of the scope of this show?
Well, I kind of feel like someone is gonna get of the stick. I feel or we're just not gonna really get to know them at all by the end of the season. Mm-hmm. Like, I really want to know what's going on with Molly and her parents, but it's like we just keep getting fed like a little bit at a time, and like it's a little bit like if you've ever seen a soap opera. Mm-hmm. Like we get like literally like 5 minutes at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Just slowly, like it's meter not just, and it's
almost as bad as Game of Thrones is.
Like, yeah, where they just keep feeding you little bits and tidbits of information. Yeah.
Where you have little bits of information, and where you know you can have a character you absolutely love, and they didn't do it so much in the most recent season, but in the seasons before, you could go like two episodes without seeing a character, you know, at all, mm-hmm. and just never see that character because they weren't in the storyline that they were.
That only happened recently because they've like narrowed their scope a lot.
Right, and they're also outside of the books now, so.
And a lot of people are now in the same place, too,
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Yeah, it's funny that you brought up Game of Thrones being outside the books at this point, because we'll touch on this a little bit more later, but Runaways is completely outside the books at this point. It's weird because we're simultaneously inside the first six issues where the kids are discovering their abilities and discovering their powers and discovering their parents are actually supervillains, but the way that that they're going about these things is entirely different. But we'll touch more on that
Interesting.
later. As far as my preferences are concerned, I'm really interested in the love triangle that we've got going on between Robert and Tina and
That's
Janet
interesting,
Stein.
huh?
That whole affair thing, like that. That's one of the things that just never happened in the books. I am really excited to see where it goes. And I was really upset that we only got that one scene. Just because, all three of those actors are doing a phenomenal job of phenomenal job of channeling all the angst and the bitter resentment that that comes with having, frankly, abusive spouses. It's at the same time traumatizing and and delightfully entertaining to watch. If I had to choose one of the plot lines that I wish would get spotlighted more, I wish it would be that one. But I can't really complain because they're doing such a good job with pacing. Someone's gonna have to get the shaft. I guess it's them, but
Well, and us, kind of a side story too, as opposed to, I mean, not that there
as
aren't
opposed to the main
side
thing.
stories, but if you look at the other parent plots being somehow the Yorks brought the dinosaur or grew the dinosaur or whatever they did to create the dinosaur. So, like that, obviously, because of Gert's relationship with the dinosaur, has a pivotal place in the Runaways in the teens story. So I'm not exactly sure that the affair has the same kind of would have the same kind of weight and impact. I mean, it would, in terms of like fidelity and like what people kids would think about their parents, but not in terms of like the powers that they're discovering that they have and their abilities and that such. So I can't I well I have I'm biased. I will fully like say my Buffy is out and I love James Marsters and I can't wait to see what happens with his character. I was really intrigued by the end of episode four when
Yes. I really like that.
I
Yeah, when
really
you
liked that because it was not what I was expecting and it showed the depth of his character too.
Oh
So
yeah,
that was really
absolutely.
cool. Yeah.
Yeah,
I was just
I
like, it's
thought
Tony Stark and Tony Stark Jr. I know,
Yeah,
right? That's
I thought
another.
that he was gonna go ahead and beat the tar out of
Yeah,
his
I did.
son
I
for
thought so
using his
too.
workstation.
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
it was a complete flip. I
Yeah.
absolutely loved it.
Like, it's
It made me
perfect
so
in your head
happy.
right now. Tell me what you see. And I was like, oh, well, okay.
That's why I'm also worried
I
with Dante is that that they're gonna try to make them really sympathetic.
Right.
Yeah.
I think I
And they're
agree,
not
yeah.
supposed to be. Because he's still
That
like an abusive
specific
husband. Yeah, and he's terrible and awful
moment,
sometimes.
I like that specific moment just because it felt like they were setting that up for later. Because he's going to keep being abusive, and he's going to still end up being one of the worst of them.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt.
You're getting
Oh
to
yeah, he
see
totally thought
this
he like kidnapped
moment.
some girl. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and he
He's
was feeling fine about it, and like they were ready to do it again. Like he has no remorse whatsoever. But to kind of plant that seed of like reminding everybody that yes, this is his son. And even though they have a really messed up relationship most of the time,
Yeah.
every once in a while he still acts like a father. And that's one of the core issues with the Runaways, like as a concept, is this conflict they have between like morality and family where they don't mesh.
Right. Where, yeah, where one is above the other. But I don't think he was behaving as a father in that scene though. Like I think you're led to sympathize and empathize with him as if he was a father, but I think it's just it's the manic inventor in him who is kind of stuck and kind of in a rut and is having trouble with his own science and sees somebody else who has an idea and is like, oh, let me help you mm-hmm. with your thing and see if it reignites my spark, like, and helps yeah. him understand. So I think it's more the, and that's what leads me to believe he's going to be like the, like one of the like bad guys, which he's Spike. Mm-hmm. So of course he's going to be like the bad guy because he's Spike.
Yeah. Yeah. I find it, I find it really appropriate also that you're bringing up Buffy in this, let's see, in this case, just because I've always viewed Runaways, like from the minute that I picked it up, I thought to myself, like, this is the Buffy of the Marvel Comics universe, where Buffy was specifically created and designed to be a metaphor for high school and for growing up and coming of age. And outside of, like what Evan said, outside of the Spider-Man comics, like Marvel never really had something like that. Because even most of the X-Men characters, that happened in the 60s, and most of the X-Men comics really focus on, you know, the adult mutants, the classic ones that we really love, while the coming of age stuff is kind of secondary for all the new mutants. But with the Runaways, like these folks are all in high school, you know, and you know, what kid hasn't gone through that stage where they think that their parent is just the absolute worst human on the face of the planet.
Right.
And these kids, and you know, and these kids actually, you know, actually do have their parents are the worst people on the planet. Same thing with Buffy, you know, every kid has thought, you know, high school is hell. Buffy's high school was literally hell. I'm really impressed that they're really capturing the essence of that, and they're finally putting it into television. Like, I mean, Buffy aired 20 years ago this year, and I feel like we finally have a TV show that is a Buffy for a new generation. Not like Buffy, you know, isn't still awesome 20 years later, but we've got a new show, and it's not going to hurt to go ahead and have another Buffy running around.
Yep. Absolutely.
I seem to recall that one of the early comic arcs with the Runaways, they even do fight actual literal vampires too.
They do. They do. And Brian K. Vaughan is known to be a very big fan of Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon wrote one of the Runaways books too.
Yeah, he wrote six issues after Brian K. Vaughan left. Anyways, I guess, you know, let's move on to item number three that I wanted to really touch on. I think we've already touched on a little bit with Regina. Was the question I wrote down was, what do we think is the most compelling part of the show through the four episodes? You know, like, what's making you come back every week? Like, whether it's a character, a main plot, a subplot, a relationship, or how the show is handling any issues. Isabella, you haven't spoken in a little while. Let's hear yours first.
Me?
Yeah, you. You're the only one here named Isabella, right?
My audio is cutting in and out a little bit.
Cool. Yeah. So. Yeah. So, yeah, let's have you go your most compelling moment through four episodes.
I want to know what's going on with this weirdo church.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
Whatever Gert called it. The I don't know. It was really long.
Church of Reborn.
How is it pronounced?
They're calling it Geborim in the
Geborim.
Show.
Yeah, Geborim.
I always pronounced
it Gibberim because it was a comic and I had the choice to go ahead and figure it out. But in the show,
and it sounds like gibberish.
Gibberim. Mm-hmm. And the slang that they've got in the show, they call them the Gibbs.
The Gibbs, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't in the comic, the Gibbs.
The Geborim there wasn't a church were characters Geborim. in the book. Not like this, though. Absolutely nothing like this.
Okay, interesting.
All right, awesome. So I agree as well. Like this church story is incredible. It's wonderful. I mean, you know, let's be completely frank here. Like, they are taking a big stab at Scientology.
Yeah.
That too. I'm like, oh my god! Like, how far is it gonna go?
No, yeah, like they have been,
especially with her. Dad being like a
Tom actor. Cruise, basically
like a failed actor.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so good. It's so
yeah. It was
good.
Spot on. It was just mm-hmm. spot on the whole thing.
Yeah, I think the thing that I love the most about the church is the fact that it's a woman who's basically the head of state. It's Carolina's mom, Leslie Dean. She's she's super big head honcho of the church, whatever they call it in Scientology. I don't care. It's a wonderful reversal where the husband is the powerless one in the religious relationship. and you know, and she's the one who's you know holding everything above him. Like it's positively fascinating. Mm-hmm. All right, so Evan, what's your most compelling moment in the show?
Oh, it's so hard to choose. I love all of it. Like I can't isolate it down to any specific thing. And it's mostly, it's just things that I'm picking up on from the comics. And I'm like, oh, that's mm-hmm. just how that should have gone. And it's, and even the things that are different, I do want to see the things that are different. Like I do want to know what's going to end up going on with the Church of Gaborim. I'm interested to find out like what this new take on, the situation with Molly is. I don't even actually remember if Amy was a character ever referred to in the comics. I didn't think so.
Okay. Yeah, I thought. Yeah, I couldn't remember.
Yeah, I'm curious about that too.
Yeah, she is not. As far as I remember, and it was a very specific plot point. Because in the original comic there were six families. Molly's parents were not dead in the original. The Pride was
Hernandez.
12 people. The Pride was 12 people, and her name was Hayes. Her name was Molly Hayes in the comic. She was retroactively made into a Latina, which is a choice that I am very very pro in this book. But yeah, there were six, and it was a specific plot point that each of these families could only have one child. It was like, and it was an extremely important plot point. All of them were only children, and that was a thing that they had bonded over.
That was part of what I was thinking about. Everybody mm-hmm. had one kid except
for the Yorkses. Yeah, except for
the Yorks. Well, no, except for the Minoru family, Amy's parents.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't understand, or I guess we do figure that out in the first episode or this. Yeah, when she tries to go take the tights from mm-hmm. her bedroom, you realize that they're sisters.
Yeah, exactly.
But I wasn't sure if she was dead. At first, I was thinking that Destiny was Amy, that Amy had mm-hmm. run away.
Yeah.
And that's who Destiny was, because I hadn't like really picked up on her name at first, and I was kind of like getting my wires crossed as to who everybody was.
Sure.
And it wasn't really clear that Amy was dead. It was just mm-hmm. the anniversary, you know, kind of leading you to think maybe, until, of course, they show her.
No, yeah. Yeah, so. I personally felt that it was pretty clear that Amy was dead. I was just kind of struggling. I was like, who's Amy? Like, I don't remember Amy. Must be a new character. Because that remember the first scene in the show where Alex is sitting in front of the television and he's logged into his computer game and then he walks away to go to school
mm-hmm.
and it has that flash of like, you know, like, you know, it says, you know, Amy something, whatever, whatever her screen name was, last login 2 years ago. And I was sitting there like, mm-hmm. oh, well, someone died. And then I finally found out that it was, you know, it's Nico's
sister.
Nico's new sister. Right?
Mm-hmm. It makes me wonder if they're setting that up, that Amy isn't a blood child of theirs. Like,
maybe
she was adopted, or there was some like broken connection there, and that's why she. Because I feel like she was sacrificed. Yeah. I don't know. That's just my imagination at this point. She's connected with the Pride somehow.
Sure, absolutely. I'm glad Evan and all of us are talking about this, because that, as far as I'm concerned, is the most compelling part of the show for me, and it is something that the purist in me is supposed to hate, because it was not in the comics. She's not a real character. I shouldn't be involved with this, but I am so into it. Like, I need to know everything that happened with this. Like, I want to know, like what's the deal with the snowfall? What's the deal with the pills? What's the deal with, like, why didn't they want to go ahead and call the ambulance? Like, I am completely invested in that story. And if that's the one thing that gets answered between now and episode 10, I'm completely on board. I guess, Regina, you're the last one.
I don't know that I have just one. I think for me, it really is the mix of all of them together mm-hmm. that I'm finding to be so compelling. And I think part of that is I haven't like settled on who it is I identify the most with.
Sure.
So that's making it kind of harder for me to pick a single storyline that I can stick with. I'm very curious about Molly's abilities. I think it's really interesting that she's just, I mean, I know it's because she's like the youngest and they're constantly like, oh, whatever, get out of the way. But like, she keeps trying to tell him like, I can do this. And everybody keeps not listening to her.
It's gorgeous. Like that's also pulled right from the books.
I had the sense of that, like not enough to know, but it was recurrent enough and strong enough of like, she played it. She used it when they were trying to find out if they knew anything. And she's like, well, you know, I'm the youngest. So they sent me in to see if I could get the booze.
My God. It was like cracking up at that. It was like,
It was great. Like, and it's, I thought so that Catherine was going to go ahead and stab her. And I was just like, no, don't do this. Molly's the best. She's great. it was, she's absolutely wonderful. I guess this leads into the next thing that I wanted to rapidly move through. So Regina, you're the Runaways novice, right? I guess had you gleaned any of the original plot from anywhere from like before watching the show? Like, you know, did you read Wikipedia? Did you do anything else?
I have a longstanding tradition of trying to go into as many things as possible with as little prior knowledge as I could. Like I said, from the title, I imagined that the kids weren't going to be the Runaways, and I'm still not sure, 100% sure if that's true or not, or if it's the Runaways that they've sacrificed for pride. That's where the title comes from. So, you know, but that wasn't from anything I had seen. That was just what I imagined, knowing it was a teen drama, knowing there were superpowers involved, and knowing the kind of cast they had for it. So I didn't have a lot of preconceptions, but I wanted it to be that way. So I could enjoy it. And now I'm curious and I want to go back and read the comics, but I have a really low success rate for actually going back and reading things that I've watched shows for, so I'm not sure it's actually going to happen.
So it's fair to say, like, you didn't come in with any like expectations, no preconceived notions, nothing like that.
No, all I knew was that there was a diverse cast of young actors, you know, in it, and that it was a good show representing diversity. That was pretty much what I knew, and I knew that it was a teen show, and I love teen dramas. Probably a little too much. but I love coming of age stories. I've always loved coming of age stories. If I have a choice to teach, I will pick a coming of age story to teach. That's pretty much always what I do. A lot of times because I'm teaching college, and so it's appropriate to my students. But
yeah, sure.
There are stories that even as you age, you can still relate to. So I always like that, you know, that Budding's Roman, the idea of the evolution of the characters, the beginning of their journey. So teen stories are always, I'm always a sucker for those. Like, I'm a sucker for, you know, young adult literature a lot of the time, to Isabella's chagrin. I still read some of the stuff that I've tried to get her to read. She's like, this is so dumb, Regina. Why do you read this?
All right. So, and, cool. And do you feel like you're having any trouble following along with the show, despite having no prior knowledge?
I don't think so. I haven't had any feeling like, I wonder if I would understand this better. The only thing I kind of wonder about, like I said, was Molly's story was about the history of some of the characters and their relationships to each other. Because there's been some sort of like insinuations of romantic relationships between them, but nothing's flat out said other than kind of, is it Nico and Alex were thinking might have something now? So I was kind of wondering if I would have known a little bit more about their dynamic amongst themselves, separate from their powers, but just them as kids.
Cool. All right. Awesome. Well, I mean, I'm glad to hear that this show actually truly is like friendly for new fans then. Because there's a bunch of folks... I'm willing to go ahead and say, like, the majority of people who are watching this show have probably never even heard of the Runaways comics before. So I guess that it's time to go ahead and turn the conversation then to the three of us who have read it. We know we've talked about it a little bit previously in this episode. Like, this show has taken a lot of liberties with the property, so much so that. Know that those of us who are familiar with the comics, like, it's at the point where like where I don't think even we quite know what's going to happen week to week, even though we have an idea of like where we know it was, where it ended up in the comics. But like even that at this point, I'm not sure that that even matters, because it's entirely possible that they could end up in a completely different place. So I guess the big questions that I wanted to focus on was what's the one character change that you've reacted most strongly to, like either positively or negatively? And we can do the same with plot changes as well. Whichever one of you wants to go first, be my guest.
I like that they made Gert and Molly basically sisters. I like that dynamic a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting to give them that backstory, and it adds a whole layer of like, what the hell happened to her parents? Was she involved? Did mm-hmm. one of the other parents put a hit out on the Hernandezes? And I don't know. I find that really interesting.
Awesome. Yeah, I absolutely love that as well. Because like in the later Runaways near the end of Brian K. Vaughan's run, Molly and Gert have that really close knit relationship, where she kind of like looks up to her as like a de facto big sister, but the fact that she's actually the big sister now, I completely agree with you. It changes their dynamic, and it A+, completely positive. So, what about you, Evan? What's the one plot change or character change that that you've reacted most strongly to?
I think definitely Molly, just in general, because of all the actual Runaways, she's the one they changed the most.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in addition to changing her like actual name and her ethnicity and such things, I think that's the least significant of the changes they made with her, because that makes perfect sense to do that sort of thing. But they also made her a lot older. Because mm-hmm. in the comics, I believe she's supposed to be 11.
Yeah, she's about 11. Yeah, exactly.
I think she's 14 in this, they said.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, dramatically changes kind of the dynamic they have with everything. Because, like, right now, she's definitely the youngest, mm-hmm. but she's not really the baby. Like, she's only, like, 2 years younger than most of them. So it's not really that dramatic of a difference. But in the comics, she was very, very young. And honestly, they actually kind of wrote her even younger than 11 in terms of her personality.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I thought, and when they actually got to the point where they did run away and they mm-hmm. were having to be self-sufficient, that played into things enormously, because they all had to kind of
take care of her. Yeah.
Like, she became their responsibility. And even though she was super strong, she was still a kid. And she also has all these vulnerabilities, like her falling asleep every time she lifts something. Like, that's straight from the comics too. But they also, the way they change things with her parents too, that changes things a lot. And I honestly, that's probably the change I like the least,
mm-hmm.
because to me, it's just, the cynic in me thinks it's the only reason they did it is because in the comics, she's a mutant. She's an X-Men mutant. And
yeah,
Marvel still doesn't own the rights to mutants, so they can't have mutants. So what do? They just kill the two parents who are mutants, and that way they don't have to explain why she's a mutant. They don't have to say what she is.
No, yeah.
So I feel like that's not really a choice they made out of any particular greater scheme. I could be wrong, but mm-hmm. I feel like it's just something they did because they don't have the rights to use mutants and they wanted to just sweep it under the rug.
Well, that helps me understand like the exaggeration of them trying to protect her, because I'm like, she doesn't look that much younger than the rest of them. So and they're like, when they're watching the ritual and Gert pushes her out of the way and says, you can't, you know, not see this anymore. And I was like, or you can't mm-hmm. unsee this, or whatever it is that she says. And I was like, why is she trying to protect her so much? She's not that, you know, because she doesn't look
much younger,
that much younger than her. I mean, they're like almost the same height, and like all the markers that you would have that would, I mean, if you were going from a 16 to an 11-year-old, you would have mm-hmm. distinct markers to like differentiate them.
Yeah.
And so the fact that they're always kind of like dismissing her, I could kind of get from her being younger, but she's not that much younger than them. So I felt like it really was kind of exaggerated.
And the puberty thing comes into play there too, in a kind of a weird way. Cause in the comics, that was significant.
That was the ongoing joke.
initially, like, they did think she was just, like, having puberty issues because...
Yeah, having her period for the first time.
And she didn't know either. And, like, mutants, they usually their mutant powers begin during puberty, too. So she was getting her mutant powers the same time she was getting her period. So it was this whole complicated thing for her. Was nice kind of in a meta way because her, like, struggles were kind of symbolic for her growing issues. So, but now they're talking about how she's, like, going into puberty. And if she's 14, she's probably been there for a while.
Right. Yeah, that's a little older for that kind of thing. But I actually wondered if that was. And have you guys seen the Buffy movie?
I have not.
Really?
I
nobody
I
here
refuse to see it because I don't want it to ruin my experience with Buffy the Vampire Slayer. The TV
I mean,
show.
It was still written by Joss, right? So it was still written.
I understand
by
that.
Joss.
Yeah,
wildly different.
I mean,
it's not wildly different. It's really not wildly different, but it is
or
like
it's
high...
just not Buffy.
What?
It's still Buffy.
Yeah, it's still in the main continuity. Like it ends with her, like, burning down the high school, which they refer
which is
to.
They
in
launched
season 1
the show on. Yeah, it was the same story, even though it's a different actress and different actors. But
that's what I mean. I mean, they're not the show to me.
No, yeah, exactly. Well, no, it's not it's Sarah Michelle Gellar. It's like not
disconnect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, but in the movie, for Buffy, when she's around a vampire or when the vampires start to come around, she starts to have menstrual cramps. Like, that's how she knows
that there's hilarious.
Danger. I mean, it is like it was so funny and so campy, but.
Oh God, that's great!
That Molly's, you know, the whole thing with, like, whatever she was going through, causing her, like, and having to, like, have the once she expressed the physical power she had, that whatever pain she was having subsided. It just it felt very much to me like a nod to that Buffy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, they thankfully didn't continue that into the show, but that was like the main thing. And, you know, there are scenes where she's like walking in the dark and she actually like doubling over like, oh, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Something stupid like, oh, this is your body letting you know that the danger is near, or something dumb like that. But
gotcha.
I just thought it was a nice homage to the original Buffy power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, so my turn now. I'm really excited. So all right, I want to start with the one that I reacted the most negatively to, which was Carolina. Her powers, her being a human glow stick, was originally contained by her wearing a bracelet in the comic books, just like it is in the show, except it wasn't some weirdo stupid church bracelet. It was one of those chains where you wear if you're diabetic.
A Med Alert.
Yeah, Med Alert bracelet. That's what it's called. It was a Med Alert bracelet, so she had a reason to always wear it.
Never take it off.
Yeah, she had a reason to never take it off. So that was the one thing that I thought to myself, just like really, like you had to build this entire weirdo stupid church reason for her to go ahead and wear a bracelet. Like, that doesn't really make a lot of sense. Like, it could have just been a Med Alert bracelet and it would have been way more believable, you know. And I feel like it's a lot easier to go ahead and force that into dialogue of just saying like, oh yeah, well, like, I'd love to go ahead and wear this accessory, but I have to wear my Med Alert bracelet because I'm diabetic, and just be done with it, you know. Not some weirdo church thing. I'm sitting there just like, that really makes absolutely zero sense. But, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm not really going to go ahead and harp on it, because if that's the worst thing that I have to worry about, then I think we're in a pretty good place with the show. The thing that I reacted the most strongly to was Nico's mother.
Yeah.
Tina Minoru was not like it's not like she wasn't a big character, because she was the part of the original Pride, and she was instrumental in helping to go ahead and find the kids, and that's where Nico originally got the staff. It was this really traumatizing scene where you thought that they were going to kill her, kill Nico with the staff, because they were just going to like stab her through the chest with it, and instead Nico's body kind of like magically absorbs it because comics, and that's where she keeps it, and she has to summon it in the comics by bleeding, I'm really glad that they made that change, because encouraging kids to cut yourself to get power, and it's like, hey,
although I thought she like cut herself on a staff when she opened it.
Yeah, there's like a little needle in it, like a
thing. Yeah, like So it kind of still incorporated, but it's not like in the comics where she had to like carry a knife with her and be like, slice my hand open, or carry it around when she's having her period, because that was a thing that they did in the comics. One of the characters looked at her and was like, I thought you could only go ahead and get that thing when you're bleeding, and then she just looks at him, and he's like, oh, gotcha. But back to Tina. Like, Tina is a humongous character in this television show, and she is like, she's downright evil.
She's wicked, she's maniacal.
Like, she is like, she is got to be like the most stone cold character that I have seen in a Marvel television show since like Kilgrave, and even Kilgrave. Yeah. Had like his joyous moments where he's like genuinely happy about things, where she is like always plotting, always scheming. Like, I feel like if she got the chance, she would just murder everyone. Mm-hmm. Like, that is how terrified I am of this woman. And I can't stop watching. Like, every single time she's on the screen, I'm just sitting there like, okay, like, what's happening? This is gonna be great, and I'm pulling the covers over my head because I'm scared that she's gonna like come out from under my bed like the bogeyman or something.
I thought she had put a hit on her husband.
When she was
talking with like the private investigator guy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I thought that too.
Or whatever.
Yep.
I thought she had found out about her affair, and she's like, oh, he's gonna die now.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah. Speaking of Kincaid, Evan, was that possibly a Dresden Files reference?
An assassin? I don't know.
Kincaid?
I don't know, but I had that same thought. I was like, no.
It was like, no. Like, think, how many assassins named Kincaid are there in the entirety of pop culture?
But I feel like if they were going to do a Dresden Files reference, they'd do it in something involving James Marsters.
Probably.
They'd have to.
They would have to. Anyways. Dresden Files is neither here nor there. Yeah.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Anyways, last bit that we want to cover, we're going to have some rapid fire questions. I'm going to go ahead and ask them to each of you, and then I'll ask it to myself, which is kind of, self-serving, but that's okay. We'll make it happen. So, Regina, favorite character?
Nico.
All right, Isabella?
Damn it, I want to say Nico too, but...
You can say Nico too!
Okay, but Caroline is a close second. Just...
Yeah.
Alright, yeah. All right, cool. Evan?
Nico, but she was always my favorite.
Alright, yeah, so... Nico was my favorite in the comics, but like, I'm really loving Alex.
I love
what they're doing with him. I feel like they've really changed what he was in the books, but still kept the same essence of the character. Anyways, these are rapid fire.
Looking forward to seeing if they're gonna continue his arc the way it goes in the comics.
The way it played out in the books, yeah. All right. Least favorite character, Regina.
I think Chase. He's kind of a jerk.
I can see that.
Yeah.
All right. Isabella.
Gert, because I don't like the dumb love triangle thing that they're doing.
Okay, yeah. I gotcha. Evan?
Frank Dean. Just because he's a putz.
Okay.
He is kind of adult.
Yeah. I was also going to go with Frank Dean, because like, he's just, I was like, okay, like you're not really adding much to the show. right? All right, cool.
So he's gonna die.
He's gonna be the first to die.
Yeah,
I was about to say. Going ultra, like, I'm sure that he's going to die. All right, next question. Regina, character you love to hate?
It's a tie for me between Tina and Victor.
Oh, God, yeah. All right, Isabella?
What's her name? Leslie?
Leslie Dean? Oh, God, yeah, she's so good
at being.
She's so good. She's so good, but she's so awful.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I love
it. She's a cult leader.
Yeah, I know, right?
She's the rotten fruit.
All right, cool. Evan?
Victor.
Victor, oh god, easily. Yeah. I really, really wanted to choose Victor for that because obviously James Marsters is my homeboy, but Tina, oh my god, Tina, I love to hate her, and I am just completely in with Tina. Like, if this show continues to have her as a villain for the next 5 seasons, I am there. Right? Okay. All right, so this one's going to require a little
bit. A little afraid that she might have had a hand in killing her daughter.
Oh, I totally think she did.
Oh, absolutely.
I have no doubt in my mind that she had both hands. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure she had both hands, and if she could get a foot in her too, she probably would.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I think that she's not a blood child. So I don't think Amy is their blood child. I think she was adopted or, there's something.
And something like that. Yeah.
That's why she was willing to do whatever sacrifice they had to do too. For her.
All right, cool.
That'll be one of my bold predictions come out is that Amy is not.
It's not a blood child?
Yeah, it's not a blood child. She's not theirs. She's adopted somehow or, some sort of other runaway maybe that they picked up in some way. Ha ha. Right.
No, I think she just found out what happened and they killed her.
That could be too. But my thing is because I think the symmetry of all of them having one child, I think was, I don't know. I felt like there was something important there and it was kind of odd that there was a second. And since you guys said there wasn't a second character in that family then.
Yeah.
So my other bold prediction is going to be that they run away.
Okay. I like it.
Hopefully.
Okay. All right, Isabella, bold predictions for the next 2 episodes.
Yes, probably that they run away. I bet they kill Leslie's husband, whatever his name is. Frank?
Frank, yep.
Frank. I bet they kill his husband. He's going to go ultra.
All right. I like it.
I thought he was going to be the next sacrifice.
I think he's still going to be.
Yeah. I think he's going to be the next sacrifice. To make up for Destiny.
All right. Sounds good. All right, Evan, your bold prediction.
I have a couple. I think in the next couple episodes, the parents are going to start genuinely suspecting the kids, know about them, and the kids will have to officially run away because of that. And I think it's going to be because of them sort of seeing each other at the police station. I think that's going to be the catalyst. Mm-hmm.
The catalyst, situation. Yeah. Okay.
And in terms of bigger predictions, I think Carolina's dad's not her real dad.
Oh,
interesting.
Yeah, I don't think he is her dad.
Yeah.
I think the guy in the mask might be potentially.
Well, he glows.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't tell for sure if that was him or her, though. Kind of
I don't know.
I think it's both of them.
Yeah, I think it was both of them, and I'm pretty sure his member was lighting up.
Yeah.
Was that not what was happening? Because that
was exactly
weird.
What was happening.
I don't know. That's the only thing I could think. I mean, why would you get naked underneath the covers and have your junk start glowing if you weren't getting it on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think. Yeah. I mean, I think it's clear at this point that is Carolina's grandfather. And I think it might also be her father, which is weird. Anyways.
My other thought is if it's not him, it's the actual Ghiborim.
Oh.
Okay. I could deal with that. All right, cool. So my bold prediction is also episode 5, they finally get out, they run away. And in episode 6, I'm predicting that the Pride is going to go ahead and send the weird cop dude that was present at Amy's death, and that they also saw in the police station, that guy. I think the Pride's going to send him after the kids, and Alex is going to kill him. Because he's got the gun. He's got the gun now. I think First Blood is going to happen in the next episodes. Like, First Blood is among the main cast. Like, obviously, we've already seen Destiny die. But yeah, I think First Blood among the main cast members is going to happen in the next two episodes.
All right.
Well, the last episode ended with Alex getting snatched, right?
With Alex getting snatched.
Yeah. So that might already be happening.
So it might already be happening.
Well, but not to cheat, mm-hmm. but of course I do. There's actually a description of the next episode on IMDb. Mm-hmm. So episode 5 is called Kingdom.
Yep.
And the description is, just when Alex thought his relationship with his parents couldn't be more strained, an old friend of Joffrey's past resurfaces. Joffrey is Alex's dad.
You mean Jeffrey?
Jeffrey, sorry.
Yes.
I always say that wrong.
Not Joffrey. Yep.
Yeah, not Joffrey, right? And mm-hmm. Alex discovers long buried secrets about his dad. After their not so fearless leader is taken, our kids spring into action to save him. And as they scramble to get Alex back, the runaways begin to experiment with their own untapped power in order to step in to save their friend. That's the longest description IMDb has of any of the episodes.
I mean, that's not even like an abstract. Like that sounds like it's an episode summary.
It's like details. It's the only one that was details on here. But right. I also wanted to note, because we talked a lot when we were talking about Star Trek Discovery, about how long their titles were mm-hmm. on each of the episodes.
Yeah, either ridiculously long or stupidly short.
Yeah, and these are all single word titles, and I'm assuming that they're going to continue that trend throughout the whole series.
All right, I like it. All right, well, we're running.
Prediction. Good, I don't need half of a poem as a title.
Right, exactly.
All right, cool. So, folks, we are running close to that hour marker. So, last rapid fire question. Regina, overall letter grade for the series as a whole through 4 episodes?
I give it an A- right now.
Cool. All right, Isabella?
B.
Interesting. All right, Evan?
I'd give it an A- purely because of the pacing issues.
That's why I gave it a B.
Yeah.
Okay. This is where I'm going to be a complete homer and give it like an A++++ because I don't care how slow it is. This is incredible. I'm just completely fanboying over it. So, internet, please go ahead and make sure that my bias is duly noted for the court. All right. So,
fantastic.
That concludes Runaways.
Well, thanks for watching and listening. Are you watching Runaways? If you are, please leave us a comment and let us know what you think. What grade are you giving the first 4 episodes of Hulu's new Marvel show? I wanted to ask this before, but is this the first Marvel show that's been on Hulu?
Yes.
Yes.
I thought so. I thought it's interesting to me that they're putting that on Hulu as opposed to Netflix, because the others have been on Netflix. But mm-hmm.
there's another one coming up that's, I think, going to be on Freeform. That's Cloak and Dagger. So they're spreading out all over the place. I'm excited about that one, too.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that they're not, like, you know, specific to one of the streaming platforms, although it does mean we have to, like, pay for all of them. So, great.
Mm-hmm. It is probably because Disney is launching their own streaming service soon, and they want to put it all on that, so they're not going to sign any more long-term
contracts. Yeah. So if you are watching Marvel Runaways, let us know. Let us know what you think. Let us know answer our rapid-fire questions we did here. Mm-hmm. Favorite character, least favorite character, character I love to hate, bold prediction for the next 2 episodes, and your overall letter grade for the first 4 episodes. So follow us on Twitter at The Geek Embassy. Check out the website. And until next time, get your geek on. Bye.